Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Say Report. I'm your host, Devin Decker, and joining me, my host companion, Seejin Sarawick. Seejin?
Hey, everybody.
I feel like I said your last name weird. I feel like maybe going on sabbatical might have been a mistake, because I've forgotten how to pronounce common words that we use on this show. Sorry to cut off your time to talk, but Sarawick. It means nothing to me. How are you, Siege?
Oh man, I am really good. Yeah, we did. We took some time. We took some time, and we are back in the world. The world is still teetering. I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but I was taking a little bit of time off. I thought maybe, just maybe, we could all get our shit together for the holiday, but it did not happen.
Well, in our defense, in the defense of the human species, primarily as it relates to the U.S. population, for which we can be considered representatives of, right? You're not here illegally, right? And I'm not here illegally, as far as I know. And if we were, we probably wouldn't say it on our show.
I don't want to take responsibility for anything without knowing what you're going to say first.
Well, it's just we pulled it together for the holiday. Everything up to Thanksgiving seemed pretty okay. And then it was late Thanksgiving when the announcement came out that, no. That was just for show, family. Oh, we put on our church clothes for the holiday. And, well, now that it's over.
Yeah. Go back to ripping each other to shreds. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Teetering. Teetering is a good term for how the world feels right now.
Yeah, man, I don't want to turn this into another dump fest after last week. So we had a real good time getting real mopey. But no, I've got some fun stuff to talk about today, and I want to make sure we do that. I just would be remiss if I did not mention that we are still in the hard times, folks. We are not there yet.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I don't know if everybody says let's get back to normal. I kind of feel like the hard times are going to be the new normal for a little bit, right?
Look,
like
I never thought we were going to get back to the way things were, but I was hoping we'd get to something different than this.
You know, it's weird. I don't want to be egocentric, narcissist, or anything like that, but I feel like every time where I start to become less vigilant is when things really start to go to pot again. And
yeah,
I
believe that's called main character syndrome, but
okay.
Keep going.
Because, I mean, I think I don't want to speak for you until you confirm for me, but one of the things we're going to talk about is Hawkeye on Disney Plus, right? We were gifted two episodes of the Hawkeye show that I would like to talk about, but along with the promise of a new Disney Plus Marvel television event came for me a little bit of anxiety. And that anxiety was that something that happened in the Eternals would be referenced or a major driving point behind Hawkeye.
Yeah, well, let me put those fears to rest immediately, because nothing in Eternals matters to the rest of the MCU.
Did you see Eternals?
I did, in fact. Yes, I did see Eternals.
I also saw Eternals. I braved the outside world. Seejin, I'm sorry that this just went from Tales from the Sabbatical to the one where we talk about the Eternals.
Here's the thing, I don't think it's going to, because I don't.
I've been wanting to talk about Eternals with somebody for so bad.
We can definitely talk about the Eternals. I'm not going to say we can't talk about it, but before we lose the thread, which we so often do on this show, but before we do that so early in the episode, no, I don't think anything in Hawkeye is going to matter. I don't think anything in Eternals is going to affect what you see in Hawkeye. And there was a few different reasons for that, and I want to make sure that we address them. First and foremost, man, do they go out of their way in Eternals to make sure that like it's not going to screw up the timeline, because they are messing with a large amount of time in that movie. And they don't want to like step on their toes. And in that, I think they really do sacrifice a lot of the connections to the actual universe. Some that I think they intended to make and then decided to back out on, but not before costumes were made. And we'll talk about that moment in a second. So that was kind of the first bit. The second bit being, and we can get into a little bit of a deeper discussion of this if you want to, but they like Eternals only just came out like a few weeks ago in the grand scheme of things, right? And it has only been in our heads for a little bit. And we are at a time in which people cannot necessarily guarantee that they can get out to a movie. They did not put Eternals out on Disney Plus like they did other movies and things like that. With that in mind, it would be real dumb of them to, on such a risky film, really like make you have to see it in order to get what's going on in Hawkeye, a series that by all accounts you could have stopped watching after Endgame. Hell, you could have stopped watching after the first Avengers, and so far what I've seen in the Hawkeye series really just kind of got what was happening.
Well, I mean, there are some pretty heavy Endgame references.
Yes, with Crone stuff and things like that. But in terms of like enjoying yourself and understanding that Clint is mopey, there's just it gets further and further and further away from it being a fear. The more you really start to put some critical thought behind the fact that like they could not guarantee that people had seen Eternals. They could not guarantee that Eternals was going to have the punch that would have been required for it to be mentioned in one of the shows yet. And on top of all of that, it's just bad like marketing filmmaking to make people depend on that sort of stuff. Now, I know what you're going to say. They've connected these things all along. I get that. But they've made connections that are fun, but they've never really gone out of their way to make a connection on these television shows, on the Disney Plus television shows, that have made it like necessary. You know what I mean? Like
I do. I understand where you're coming from.
Didn't already have access to. Like, yeah.
Right. I guess really what it comes down to, what it boils down to, this fear, and it was like a real anxiety sort of issue where I'm like, I don't want the, first of all, Eternals, as much as we joke about it being Jack Kirby just trying to do New Gods in the Marvel Universe, which...
I'd argue that this movie is Watchmen, but yeah, New Gods, and yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I'm talking back when the New Gods were made in the comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the New Gods had happened... And then they're like, we don't really know what to do with them. So he brought the same concept to Marvel. Yeah. And it's such a Jack Kirby concept, the Eternals, if we're really going to boil it down. So like the one thing for me is, of all this Phase 4 stuff, right? Even mm-hmm. something like Black Widow, which one of my favorite characters who in the MCU up to that really never got her own story. Something like Eternals actually being made into a movie was something I really wanted to see. Like, it was something I was excited about, and we're going to talk about that, I'm sure, based on the tone you've taken with the movie so far. but that being said, so like the Jack Kirby of it all, it can't be denied. But the other thing is that anxiety comes from a Pavlovian response that I will have to admit the MCU has created in me. I so badly do not want to miss the reference or have a reference taint my experience with another movie that I feel so beholden to experience them in their release order. And I mean, and granted, that's a problem for me. That's a Devin problem that I am 100% willing to admit. It doesn't change the fact that it affected me, and I sure. And now that I know about it, I'd like to work on it. I mean, sure, I tried to book a theater this morning for Spider-Man No Way Home, because even the 1 second of movie that I saw, a trailer that I saw before having to go back out to the cash register to talk about the fact that, I mean, let's boil down my Eternals experience and the fact that it didn't make me want to go back to the movies again anytime soon. That's going to be the first story point of my time seeing the Eternals, is I'm like, I'll look at it and I'll see what I can do. I was going to Connecticut anyway to pick up soda for the holidays, like we always done. You've had some of our Hosmer Mountain sodas while you're here for a holiday party. It's kind mm-hmm. of a Decker tradition. And, you know, they're very good about it. You call in your order and then they just take it out to you. You don't need to go in. Like, they did not have that last year. Last year they were just closed. But now they actually have a system so that you can get the soda, right? And it's a lot less Willy Wonka going in there and seeing all the crazy types of sodas that they've made over the year. Basically, all we got was root beer, sarsaparilla, and birch beer, because that's kind of all they're making, right? The staples. They didn't have cream soda, which was weird. Just like strange, right? Because I think of that as like their four horsemen. Yeah, like,
well, it feels like that is like the baseline, like that they then create all other sodas off of. It'd be like making Coke with cherry and not bothering to also offer Coke. Like, what do you what?
Right, exactly. I mean, they used to have a blue cola. They don't do the blue cola anymore. They only do the red cola. The blue cola being a Pepsi taste alike, while the red cola is a Coke taste alike. So, like, it's just strange what has changed because of that. And, like, seeing it in terms of a small business and all of that, right? But I knew I was going to be in Connecticut for that. It also happened to be cheap movie day at the theater by Mystic. So I'm like, oh, if I go and I pick up the soda, then I can see the movie, and then I can get a ride home with Dale. And it's going to work perfectly, right? And in out of an abundance of caution, I took an aisle seat and I booked the seat next to me as well. Cheap movie day, I figure for the cost of a regular movie ticket, I can have that buffer, right? Because I'm not still 100%. And one of the reasons that Black Widow was ruined for me was because I thought I had that buffer, and because they weren't selling seats next to seats when I bought my tickets. And then they like lifted that restriction the day of. So then the seat next to me was sold that day. So like, oh, okay. So I buy these seats. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I get my tickets. I go into the theater. And I don't have a chair where I bought one of my seats.
Oh, my God.
So I sent you a photo of it.
Oh, my God. You sent me this random photo of a theater seat that didn't exist. And you were just like, more on this later. And you were
this
like,
is the later. We're in the later. Yeah.
Oh my God, that was ridiculous. You're gonna have to post that photo somewhere.
Yeah, it'll go up now that I've told the story. Yeah.
Is like the picture you sent, it didn't even look like there was room for a seat at any point.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I've sat in that seat before. Like, that's one of the reasons why I booked it. Because, first of all, it was in like the screening theater at Mystic Luxury, which I'm not afraid to say, but I like that theater. Generally, I like that theater. This was that first one, that's not on them that they changed mandates and were able to sell more seats to a Marvel movie the weekend that it came out. I can't fault them for that. And then this one, right, like they've been redoing the theater and this is the last auditorium to be done. So it's like maybe they just started the process of redoing it and forgot to like not have that seat available online anymore.
Just took one seat out and thought, well, that's good enough for today.
Well, then they realized like, oh, well, no, Thanksgiving is coming. I actually think the problem is there was a special event booked in Auditorium 3. So my guess is that, oh, shoot, we need to shift what was in 3 over to 2 because we already sold tickets.
Yeah.
Like it feels like it doesn't feel like it was the plan is what I'm going to say. But yeah, so I don't have a seat. So I see the opening of the No Way Home trailer, which is enough to make me excited for it, but I don't want to think any more on that movie until I get to see that movie. Hence why I'm trying to book a theater for it, you know, to hopefully avoid all of the foibles that I've dealt with so far with things such as...
They can't rip out the seat if you have all of them.
Exactly. Even if they rip out it, as long as there's one place for me to sit.
I'm going to point out that this is a gross overreaction.
Well, no, it's
time
also
seat is missing, and then all of a sudden you're just like, "Fuck it, I'll take them all."
That's not it. It's not a gross overreaction. It would be a gross overreaction if the secondary thing is my father also wants to see Spider-Man, and you know, with his, you know, he has issues that make COVID-19 and all of its various variants, even vaccinated, a bigger threat to him, right? His age and all sorts of things like that. So, like, if we're going to rent a theater for anything, it's going to be for the one that I really care about spoilers on, and also the one where he really shouldn't sit in an auditorium with any other people, right?
Yeah.
We shouldn't have any X factors in that situation. But yeah, so I then stepped out and I said, so I don't have a seat where I bought the seat. And they're like, oh, and I'm like, and you still sell seats, so I don't want to just sit somewhere else and then have to move.
Yeah.
So if you could just change my seat over, and I got a good seat and ended up being a better seat than where I would have been based on just how that movie is. And I really enjoyed myself, but it didn't seem like anybody else in the auditorium enjoyed Eternals. I guess now we talk about Eternals. Spoilers for Eternals, a movie that's only been out for 3 weeks and I was afraid would have lasting effects on Hawkeye, which I've now come to find out is apparently set 2 years after the events of Endgame.
Which is weird because they say present day a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, so that's what I mean is we gotta talk about Hawkeye. Like, I don't want to get away from Hawkeye, I guess is what I'm saying, yeah. Because I do want to talk about the one episode I saw. I will say that up top, as I have not watched episode two yet.
Okay.
Because I watched episode one and enjoyed it so much that I was like, I need more people to be watching.
I need to share
this
with people. I completely get that. But okay, can I just get, even if it's 10 minutes on Eternals, because I've been sitting on Eternals feelings because I'm the only one in the house who saw it. And yeah, I have so many.
So let's
thoughts.
Talk about Eternals and say 10 minutes and then talk about it for the whole episode like we always do, man. Let's
all right,
do
wonderful.
This.
Wonderful. Let's say it.
So let's steal a little bit of the movie magic from the ASCU here for a second and just do a little bit of order to this. Like, top of the order, initial feelings on this movie. I do really enjoy this movie and, in fact, cannot wait to see it again. Like, I want to watch it again because of the feelings that I have about it, because of what happens in the second half of that movie, last third of that movie. Like there is a lot about Eternals that should be talked about, should be seen, and should be loved. I don't think it's ever going to be anybody's top-tier Marvel film, but on that same token, I had a hell of a time with that movie. I, much like you, think I might be the only person in my theater who did. But, like, I did enjoy myself in my time with that movie. But, man, there is some messy stuff in that film. And I don't even mean from a concept standpoint. I think conceptually, it's a pretty tight film. And the ways in which that they kind of open the door to connect it to the rest of the MCU are really good. The ways in which they... But then what happens is you end up with really clunky lines to like remind you that it's part of the MCU. And that's the movie's problem, is that there's so much potential and there's so much great concept going on and there's so much great work being put in. Like, I think there's phenomenal moments in the acting. I think there's great moments in the action. Like, I think there's a lot of good stuff in Eternals, and it's just marred by just a lot of just like clunky, bad decisions all throughout. And my example of this is there is a moment in which you are reintroduced to, I'm going to say his name wrong, Kingo? Is that how you say it?
Kingo.
So there's the moment where you're... Go ahead.
That's not his original name. His original name is Enkindu, and then Kingo is just sort of what he's changed his name to.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, see, I'm not, this is another important thing. I'm also not carrying this kind of baggage going into this movie. And so, like, I feel like I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place with the people that are done with Marvel. And I've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. I have people in my life that are just like, Endgame's over. I don't want to keep getting into the Marvel stuff. I need to take a breath. And they have no interest in a movie like this because it is so far removed from anything that they would like to see. And then I have the people that love Marvel and they're like, oh, I know all this stuff about Eternals. And so they don't have any interest in this movie because of changes like that get made. So, like, I'm stuck in this really weird place of, like, I've got nobody. Like you, I've got nobody to talk to.
Can
about
I talk
this, right?
about, like, that change, right? Just make that a change. Just make that a change. He shouldn't have ever been referred to as Enkindu in the film. It's the fact that he's referred to as Enkindu when they're, like, in, I don't know, ancient Babylon. They use that name for him. And I'm just like... Oh yeah, Kingo, right? I guess that's his original name. I mean, that's his power set, right? At the end of the day, his power set is Enkindu's power set. So, like, it then makes sense. And then he becomes Kingo, and I'm like, well, I kind of get that, because it's a more Anglicizing of that name, right?
Yeah.
It makes sense with how language evolves, but also it's a lot easier if you're going to be a Bollywood star to call yourself Kingo than to call yourself Enkindu.
Yeah.
Which is not like as Indian or anything like that. Like, it's very much an older dialect.
So there's the moment, right, where he is reintroduced and we see present day him, and there is an entire Bollywood dance scene, and that scene is great, and like I love like the dance and the work and everything and all that sort of stuff. But there's so obviously a group of dudes dancing around him that have Captain America shields that are stylized to match the style. Like, they're not just holding like a bunch of vibranium shields. Like, they're wearing stylized Captain America shields. And there is a lot that's going on in that moment and in that dance where I thought, oh, he's doing a Captain America, like this, like it's not an unusual thing, like he's doing like a Captain America movie or something like that. And then the reveal is, no, he's doing an Icarus movie, a character that is like is he doing a movie about Icarus, or is he doing a movie about the legends of Icarus and it just happens to be inspired by Icarus? It's never made clear. And then why are there all these Cap emblems everywhere? Is that somehow tied into that? And I'm like sitting there and I'm spending like 10 minutes trying to figure that out, and I'm missing what's going on because I'm trying to figure out what the hell the costume was all about. And it occurred to me like days later that what probably happened is at some point it probably was supposed to be a Cap thing, but there's so much in this movie that they like they try to pull it out of that timeline. They really try to pull away so that they don't like upset like anybody's like thought process while watching it, to the point where that probably was supposed to be Cap oriented, and at some point they just switched it so that it was all that it was this different thing. But by that point costumes are made, you know, like props are put together, like there's all this stuff going on. So it literally was just a moment of just like, fuck it, let's just use it. And it's just like, that is the attitude for this entire film, is there's a moment where something happens and it's just good enough. So they're like, fuck it, just leave it in. And it's like, no, guys, like go back to the drawing board. You're fucking Disney. You're Marvel. You've got the money to do this. Reshoot the hell out of some of this stuff. Make it better. Make it work. There's these moments where there's like I really love some of the acting on display in this movie. And then there are moments where the acting is like first take level, and I hate being that guy sitting in the audience being like, oh, could have done a redo on that line read. Like, I don't want, like, that's not the kind of movie viewer I want to be, but that is the kind of feeling that this movie invoked in me. And when it comes to criticism, is it's that kind of stuff. And that's so unfortunate, because like I said, there's so much stuff in it that I really love. I love the idea of them being the inspiration for all of these legends in our own history. I love this idea of them being there and they're growing these feelings about what their position is in both their religion for all intents and purposes, but also like their love of humans and their humanity. And the idea that their religion tells them to do this one thing, but then they find out that really at the end of the day, their religion is actually meant to be the complete opposite of that, and the ways in which they all have different reactions to that. You've got some that are so tied to their religious doctrine that they become just hateful villains. You've got some that are tied to their doctrine, but they don't want to become that. So they just remove themselves from the conversation. And then you have some that just completely turn themselves on their religious doctrine. And like, that's a phenomenal conversation to be having in front of us right now as these super heroic figures in this world that you have tied to Tony Stark and Steve Rogers. Like, these are phenomenal conversations. I was not kidding when I said that, like, it really invoked a sense of like Watchmen in me as I was watching this. And that's rad. Like, the MCU tackling stuff like that is phenomenal. And then to just not like not give it its due just sucked.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I will agree that it's such heady stuff. It's so cool how like one of the big strikes against this movie is that it's just trying to fill quotas and appeal to everybody with the ethnically diverse cast and having the homosexual character and the deaf character. Like, that's the thing that I've heard a lot of critique about this movie on. But the really cool thing about that is it sort of becomes this microcosm of our world, and then you get to see how different people relate to it. Not necessarily based upon what they represent, but it is sort of this cool, like, cut out of an entire population of our planet reflected against just 10 individuals.
Exactly. And to those kinds of critiques, I just want to say fuck off. Like I'm not going to speak for you, Dev, but I, this kind of relates to what we were talking to last week with me, where like, I've got a real issue with the ways in which people talk about the idea that like, oh, they're just doing this for the screen grab. They're just doing this for the Vine. Like they just want the attention. Like, the idea being like, they just want to get people's money. So they're catering and kowtowing to individuals. And it's just like, fuck off, man. Because yes, that is what they're doing, but that's what these movies are made to do. Like, why do you think they make these movies, bro? So like, yeah, to have a wonderful African-American represented father on screen that is also gay, that is also powerful, like, I mean, God, his moments in the final fight are fucking rad as the one person that can hold down Icarus and like negate his powers. Like, he's amazing. Like, and so I don't care. Like, I don't care that it's catering to me, that it's pandering to me. Pander to me, please. Like, Iron Man pandered to me. Endgame pandered to me. Why can't this movie pander to me? Let it pander to me. That's what these movies are made to do.
Right. It would be one thing if those other examples of MCU pandering didn't exist, and then along comes the Eternals, but they understand who they're marketing the movies to, right? It's not the first time that they've done it. It's not going to be the last time. And honestly, if that's what your focus is on, go find something else, right? Because that's not what this is about. It's not
Well,
about
and
that.
right, and I kind of and I hinted at, like, I didn't really know what some of these criticisms and counter criticisms have been, but I pointed out the fact that it has been very obviously pointed out to me that a lot of those types of criticisms are not coming from peoples within those communities, because those people within those communities are finally getting pandered to in a way that they've never had before with these movies, and like they deserve that. They just like we deserve to see these kinds of bodies on screen. And if your issue is that like you think that the only reason they're on screen is to please us, like, And if you've got something against that, you need to go. Like you need to reconsider your position on the world if the reason that you don't like seeing this character on screen is you feel like it's not for you. Like whoa, man, like that's not the conversation that we're having. Like you're just this isn't it's gross. It's just a gross way to criticize this film because like it's a Marvel movie. Like I don't understand this sudden desire to hold it up to a standard of like friggin' Shakespeare. As a guy that often holds these movies up to Shakespeare, like it's just a weird way to view this film and a weird way to critique it, especially when, as I said, there are just some straight up flimsy things in this movie that you can definitely point out as like fucking weird. Like there's just some choices that are made in some moments that are just I don't know. Like they reveal the moment that Festus, I mean, you're gonna have to keep correcting me on names if I'm
No,
not saying them
fastest was
right.
correct. Yep.
Yeah, well, so they point out the moment with Icarus and him sitting at the table that he has been protecting the house that his husband and his kid live in, and like, and it's a beautiful reveal that moment when Icarus hits the window, but then to like, kind of like bow away from it when he breaks the table is funny, but they never point out anything else he's done. So as far as I can tell, all he did was just put nice glass in the windows,
Yeah,
like.
he made the house impenetrable. If
But I
you're in the
want to
house, you're
see other,
safe.
but that's what I'm saying is
Yeah.
like, show me more of that because man, it would go a long way to me really truly understanding how he's using his powers now, besides watching him fix a bike for 2 seconds and seeing that moment with the window. Other than that, I've got nothing to hang my hat on with that character. And that's a shame because like my one of the biggest moments in this movie for me, like actual punch in the gut, tears in the eyes moments for me is him and Ajak like sitting in Hiroshima after 1945 and him just losing it because he realizes that the technology that he's introduced to this world has in effect in his lifetime directly led to this moment. And it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. And like,
I
that
got a
is.
time out. I got a Zach Morris time out. We're gonna talk about Saved by the Bell later too. There's a little teaser. That's not why I'm timing out. I'm timing out because I want to applaud you. I need to give you your proper for understanding the point of that Hiroshima scene, because I've read two articles that say that it's Marvel Universe trying to retcon real history and take away the human responsibility of dropping the atomic bomb in World War II, and how that is dangerous. And
It's
it's
just,
like that is
man.
like, I'm like, you guys are really failing to see the forest for the trees, because he's just upset that because of the technology he introduced to humanity, it got to this point that his technology couldn't be used for peace, but that it was weaponized and used for war
By humans.
by
Like the
humans. Yeah,
idea
like.
being that these humans are responsible for this moment, and he had hoped the best of them and was wrong.
Yeah, it's him losing all of his faith, and it's why he turns away from humanity for so long until he falls in love with, I believe Ben is his partner's name, or husband's
Yeah.
name, it's his husband. I believe Ben is his husband's name. And it's like, and that is the reason why he is motivated to fight for the Earth in the final moments of the film. Like, to think of it as just like, oh yeah, no, he gave him the A-bomb and then he got mad because they used it. Like,
isn't it Oppenheimer? Like, I have become death. Like,
I have become death. Exactly. Yeah.
It's that same idea. We don't blame him for taking credit for all of the deaths in Harry. Like, we don't point at him and be like, no, you're trying to take this away from us. Like, no, like it is solely placed at our feet. It is our responsibility that happened in that moment. It's just that he gave us a gift and we did something terrible with it, which is exactly what happened. We were given the gift of nuclear power, and rather than use it to save humanity, which people today still think we can do, and I'm not even going to get into that conversation, but like, there is still a huge number of people that still believe nuclear is the thing that is going to like save us, and like we proved in its earliest moments that we don't know how to handle it.
It's just
a beautiful moment. You know, and that's what I mean.
I need the time in. I need the time in. I want to make sure that we're not in some sort of weird meta space. Time in. Yeah. But no, you're right. Like, that moment was crazy. And it's actually one of the other things that drove me to go see the movie, is that the Hiroshima scene in Eternals and what it means if you retcon history. And I'm just like, okay. But then that whole sequence, right, totally speaks in line with heavy thematics of the MCU, right? I mean, that's Iron Man just like deconstructed into another scene, because he wants to be there for the energy portion of it. He's not there for the weapon portion of it. And then when he realizes that his weapons are being used against us, he stops that and then focuses on the arc reactor technology. Like, and nobody's mad at Iron Man for that whole thing. Right.
No, in fact, it was quite like at the time applauded as like a way to tackle our responsibility within that issue in a format that at that time it was not a very popular format. Like, the idea that they were using a superhero movie to address like war crimes was actually like lauded at the time that Iron Man came out.
Yeah. So it's just everything will eventually eat itself, Ouroboros or whatever you're going to say. What I want to give credit to in this, right, first of all, I saw Eternals, and the mark of a good Marvel movie to Devin Decker is if I then got to go out and pick up all the figures. And I currently have every Eternal except for Ajax, because she doesn't release until the 5th of December as a Walmart exclusive, but I have everybody else. Initially I had Angelina Jolie because I thought she was going to be hard to find, and the same with Kingo, because he was the only one who was, like, sold out everywhere. Mm-hmm. But then once I saw the movie, I'm like, I have to get everybody. And I found a nice little Black Friday sale where I ended up getting all the rest of the figures for half price. So nice. I felt pretty good about it. Also, the Eternal line is currently killing Marvel Legends on toy store shelves. Just, like, a little bit of news from the toy line, because they are just sitting there not selling. Which is another sad thing, right? But I think it's because kids don't want to go see the movie. And if kids saw the movie, I think they'd be really impressed with at least half of the characters, right?
Yeah, there's definitely one or two characters that a kid would latch onto. But I don't know. It's not that I never want to say, like, you don't bring your kids to this or this isn't for kids. But if there was a movie, if there was a Marvel movie that your kid was going to kind of wander around the theater to, this would be
it's
the
probably
one.
This one. Yes, that's the other thing, right? If a parent goes and sees it, like, to do it, or reads reviews to see if their kid can see it, they would probably steer away from it. It was a bold move by Hasbro to release all 10 Eternals as figures, as a wave of their stuff. And it's actually sad that they're just sitting there, and nobody is buying them. But that's...
I'll see if I can find a Gilgamesh. That would be...
there's the problem with Gilgamesh. He's the Build-A-Figure.
Ah!
Because let me tell you, one of the only reasons that I'm like, I guess I'll buy everybody, was because I need Gilgamesh. He's so good in this movie, in terms of, like, I mean, everything. When he just breaks that cast iron pan...
Yeah. No, and I mean, like, the moments he has where it's just him and Angelina Jolie, that, like, I don't know what kind of career that guy has had before or will have after, but the ways in which, again, in a movie that had a lot of problematic acting moments for me, he is able to just, like, completely hold his own against an actress like Angelina Jolie is amazing. And like, you know, you're sitting there and part of your brain is just like, I can't believe I'm watching Angelina Jolie in a Marvel movie. That is one thing that you have to spend some time getting over. And then you see these moments where like it's just this one-on-one between the two of them, and it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I really liked this movie. But then where I want to, so it passed that one. But then the other thing, right? And I'm going to use a lot of Marvel Legends math. I don't talk about toys that much on the show, but it's a facet of my life. It's a pillar of Devin Decker. The character who doesn't come with a build-a-figure piece is Icarus. Now, what that usually means is if there's one character that everybody's going to buy, it's
Yeah.
that guy, right? The other figures have the build-a-figure pieces kind of to push sales on them, right? Like maybe people don't want a Druig figure or a Makari figure, but if you want to build Gilgamesh, you need them to get his right leg and his head. So, that's how they do it. But
Right.
Icarus, he's going to sell on his own. So purely on that, and knowing him as an Eternal, right? And knowing what he is in the comics, I kind of figured he was going to be the main character of the movie. So when I sit down and the movie, it kind of starts that way, but then it pulls the rug out from under you. And no, this is Cersei's story. I was so happy. I was so happy because it talks a lot about what Phase 4 of Marvel has been so far is basically while things were going on in America, a lot of other things have been going on in the world.
Right.
Right? We see that there's the widows and the Red Room going on in Russia. We know about the Ten Rings in China now, and now we know about the Eternals, which is that stuff that's just been kind of going on under the surface. That's been going on for about 7,000 years on
Yeah.
your planet, MCU people. So like, just understand that there's more than what you think going on this planet.
Yeah. It's been a real blast, like getting to see that sort of stuff. And that's the other thing that I really want to applaud this particular movie for, is that all we have been hearing, even up through Shang-Chi, is that there's a formula to Marvel movies. They stick to the formula. It's just the formula. It's tweaked a little, but it's good this time. Or, you know, that's always part of the conversation, right? I feel like this movie goes so far to not hold on to that formula, much in like kind of pulling the rug out from under you on who the main character is, the ways in which it goes back and forth to kind of tell the origin stories of each character, the ways in which the twist in the end. I mean, let's talk about it, the turn of Icarus and realizing that he has just been. I mean, I both kind like I wasn't expecting that moment of reveal that he had been like the murderer the entire time, but also the second it happened was so on board for it. It wasn't one of those like unearned twists. It was one of those where it was just like, of course, like it was it's so rare that you get a twist that you weren't quite like looking for that also works. And then like going back and watching the rest of the movie, like thinking back on those moments, I definitely can see it
It
now.
was a Usual Suspects moment. It was
Right.
so wonderful.
Right.
And I want to give all the credit to them. Because, like, we talk about how it's pretty easy to sight read stuff. I didn't see that coming. And the reason I didn't see that coming was knowing what I know about Eternals, I was convinced that Ajak had gone deviant.
Yeah.
I
Well,
thought, like, that was the
and
whole
that's,
plot of
I
it.
know. And then the moment that they reveal that, no, she actually was like going to be on board with this kind of plan, and it's why she chose Cersei, and everything falls into place. Everything works the second you realize what has actually been happening the whole time. And to that, there's a double-edged sword to that, right? There, on the one hand, it does make the first half of the movie feel a little messy sometimes. And that is just, and there's ways to make a movie like that and have that not happen. You just pointed out, like, Usual Suspects does that fine. So, like, it's not to forgive the movie's messiness, but it does at least explain why some of the beginning feels messy. But the other thing about that is it's also one of the biggest critiques about this movie is people talking about how they're having a hard time with getting into the complex story, the convoluted story. And so it's like, what do you want? You want Marvel to not stick to a spoon spoon-fed formula. But then the second they do something that's not a spoon-fed formula, there's no recognition of that attempt. Instead, you shit all over it for it not being edible, for it not being consumable. And like, so like, all you're doing is you're just reassuring us that Marvel movies for the end of time now are going to always have the same beginning, middle, and end with a giant CGI fight in the third act. Because even that, there is that moment where this movie starts to lean into that, but then it turns into it like that. And that's really what this movie does, is it starts leading you down the path you think you know, and then it turns into this whole like Moana style, like she's gonna just turn the earth.
Yep. I'm glad that you thought about Moana too, because I'm like, this is a Moana ending. Yeah. And it's exactly what it was.
But that's what I mean. It turns it on its head, and it doesn't always succeed. It's not always graceful. It's definitely tropey, in even in the ways it tries to not be Marvel tropey. But at the end of the day, like, it was Marvel trying so many new things that, like, I could not help myself but enjoy it, despite the fact that I did not love what was necessarily on screen. The sum is greater than the individual parts.
Agreed. I mean, for me, I was happy with everything. I liked seeing all these characters. First of all, I loved the gender changes of Cersei, Sprite, and Makari, which if you just started reading them, they have been reborn as females in the comics, because of course they have been. But like, it's just one of those things where I'm like, all right, cool. So you guys changed some genders, but like, it totally worked for why with the whole thing. Like, the question of Sprite, like, Sprite's whole big thing is, why would they make me this? Why wouldn't they be older? Why am I a child? And the fact that, like, it's to inspire the imaginations and the mythology for the people of Earth. So, like, by delivering it from a child's perspective, like, mm-hmm. it can be delivered to children who will learn it and then propagate those stories and legends they heard from another child. Like, they made so many cool choices in terms of world building and storytelling. And, like, on the one hand, it doesn't feel like a Marvel movie at all. And then on the other hand, it completely fits in with everything that we've seen from the MCU so far.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, like, like I said, it's never going to be top lists for me. It's never going to be in the top 10 or anything like that. But I enjoyed my time with it, and I am looking forward to watching it again and watching it with people that haven't seen it and talking about it and having these kinds of conversations. Because, like, you talk about the idea of that conversation, that moment that Sprite has where they say, like, why am I this way? Why was I made this way? And, like, yeah, like, that is a conversation that's going on in our world right now. And the MCU has always done a good job of taking common, like current events, like not like ripped from the headline style, but deeper than that. Like, we talked about it with Iron Man, but also, like, I have always touted that one of my favorite things about Captain America in the MCU specifically is not about a Superman that represents us and he can do no wrong, but rather he is just one guy who thinks he's doing the right thing for what he considers to be moralistically correct, and to the point where he's no longer Captain America, really, by the end of his second movie. He has two more, three more, five more films that he shows up in. And at that point, he's not representing America in the MCU. He's representing, like, ideals that we as Americans hope we hold. And that is what makes him so cool, is that in the MCU specifically, is that he can still tout the moniker of Captain America because he is holding up American ideals while at the same time challenging the America within those films is awesome. Roll that into what you see in the Eternals, is that you have these conversations that are just so deep and present right now. You have these conversations of, like, bodies and gender and race and the ways in which they are on screen. And it invites that kind of criticism because of the ways it made those changes. But at the same time, those changes make total sense because, like, at the end of the day, the other conversation worth having is that they're not human. Like, we're not talking about a group of 10 humans. We're talking about space robots, I mean, for all intents and purposes.
I mean, they're two of the, well, actually, they're kind of all of the big three, right? They are wizards, they are androids, and they are aliens.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
And if you're going to talk about Eternals, especially in terms of, like, the friggin' valets of the Celestials, I couldn't think of the word that I wanted there. Whatever. What is Silver Surfer to Galactus? He's a herald. As if you want to look at the Eternals as the heralds of the Celestials, which they kind of are, right? Like, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, at least in this movie, they're represented as they are the heralds of a celestial, right? They are sent to prepare a planet for the Celestials, the same way that Silver Surfer prepares those planets for Galactus. I mean, this is a way, if they didn't have the Final Four stuff, the Fantastic Four stuff, the Final Four, what the fuck is wrong with me? The Fantastic Four stuff, and we didn't know that it was somewhere down the line, right? Because they've shown us a graphic somewhere. Like, the Eternals feel like we're going to take the place of Galactus and the Fantastic Four with these characters. Yeah. At least the more cosmic elements of them.
Well, and what's crazy is that this is not the first time that we've talked about Celestials.
Right.
Because of things like specifically the Guardians movies. There's mm-hmm. been two known instances of that, both with Ego and Nowhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like it ties into it really well, and what they tried to do was something new, bold, and different with essentially blank slate characters. What they did with Iron Man in 2008, what they accomplished with the Guardians of the Galaxy in 2014, they tried again with the Eternals. And I don't know if it's because they went from 5 to 10 or just the fact that it really does feel like they didn't want to alienate too many people if they decided we're not going to go see Eternals. Right. Because you talk about that Bollywood dance scene. And once we get to Hawkeye, which should be happening in like the next couple of minutes, we're going to talk about how that would have been a moment. That would have been a moment that tied Eternals to Hawkeye that was taken away.
Yeah. And it's just the choice to not really focus too much on the rest of the MCU is a really interesting one. They don't spend nearly enough time really digging into why they don't, like, by the end of the movie, I understand why they don't step in with Thanos, but man, by the time they actually bring it up in the movie, it's not given its due. So like when she like blows off, like, Dane Whitman, but Kit Harington, not enough in this movie. But I'm really looking forward to it now that I know who he is in the world. But but that moment when he asks that and she basically like gives him a wave off answer of we're not supposed to get involved, it feels like bullshit. And again, by the end of the movie, I am much more on board with that answer, but I feel like they had spent more time on it then, right? But that's the same way that they shoehorn in a comment about Steve Rogers and Tony Stark at dinner one night, and they like offhandedly mention like people turning to dust at some point. Like there's these shoehorned in lines that feel gross. Meanwhile, they have these opportunities within the world itself to really kind of tie it in, and they don't take it because they're afraid to, because they don't want to alienate people, and they don't want us sitting there the whole time trying to figure out where we are in the timeline and what we're doing and where they were and all this stuff, because that's not the point of this particular story. And I appreciate that, but then don't put the clunky lines in.
What it feels like is that they wanted to make sure that if this movie landed like a lead balloon, that they could never reference it again and everything would be okay. And that makes me so sad, because I think in doing that, they kind of fulfill the prophecy. Like, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, we're not going to tie this to anything else in the MCU because, God forbid, it doesn't do well and we need to keep working with it.
It's the first time we've seen that from Kevin Feige in the MCU proper since Iron Man, that they have made it a choice like that, and you can feel it in moments of this movie that they were afraid to go too far in towards that sort of stuff, and that's the geeky side of me being bummed out about stuff in this, because the rest of the stuff that bums me out is just old man. Like, I know too much about film type stuff, or not enough, depending on who you talk to. But like, but that idea that like those are issues just about like movies in general, and people can argue about like, oh well, it's a choice, and maybe you don't like it, but somebody else does. Blah 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 blah. But like, when it comes down to it, as an MCU guy, my only real problem with this movie, from that standpoint, is that it's the first one where we see them kind of standoffish to really kind of put their foot down that they're going to stand behind this franchise. Now, that being said, I have no doubt we'll see these characters again. Hell, I have no doubt that they'll be in Eternals 2 someday. Like, that's just the way that they work. They're thinking five years ahead, despite the fact they may not be talking about it so much anymore. They're still doing that. And I think that they really do like have the ability here to kind of step in and just bring it on back. I mean, look at what they did with Thor Ragnarok after what happened with Thor 2. Like, there was a lot of issues with Thor 2, and there was a lot of concern that maybe that was kind of it for Thor's character. And now we're staring down the barrel of there possibly being a whole new trilogy.
Which, oh my God, I hope that happens. I love Thor so much. I like the Dark World. I like Thor the Dark World. But again, because it's like heavy mythology stuff and heavy, deep cuts from the Marvel Universe. But then people get mad because it's changed. I don't know. We've given this more time than we said we were going to, which that's what we do on the Say Report.
Yeah, I do want to throw out one last thing, is that when I checked Rotten Tomatoes afterwards, just to kind of get a feel for some of the ways that I was feeling about it and seeing how the world was feeling about it, I did note that it is still sitting at 80%. Yeah, it's still sitting at an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes as far as fan go. Look, critics are 50%, so it's give, take it or leave it. Some of them love the idea that it breaks the formula. Some of them are like, oh, but it's still boring, so it doesn't matter that it breaks the formula. This is, you know, this ain't it, Chief, that type of thing. But as far as fans go, I mean, like, 80% is not a bad number to get for this movie, and that's with thousands of reviews. So, like, it's also that there's a lot of this weird feeling around it, and this is kind of goes back to the Ghostbusters stuff that we were talking about last week. There's this feeling that the zeitgeist around it is talking about it being this rotten fruit that has fallen from the Marvel tree for the first time. But the thing is like, it's not doing that bad. Like, people are enjoying their time with this. So, like, I also need to kind of, like, I'm saying that more for myself than I think anybody else in the room right now, is to remind myself that people are enjoying this film. I just have to stop listening to the internet on this sort of stuff.
Right. But that's one of the things where it's so hard to do that because of the world right now, where, like, I can't see the movie and then form my own opinion and then know that, well, those are just people on the internet complaining, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's that strange thing, because any other time I don't really give a fuck about what the internet is saying about a movie, because I was there opening day, I saw it, I have my opinion, and then whatever's happening on the internet, I can be like, well, I can understand where the person got there, or they're just wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like, their opinion is just not correct. Like with the Hiroshima thing, right? Where I'm like, you guys didn't understand. He didn't give them the atomic bomb, right?
No.
He didn't take away the human responsibility of dropping the atomic bomb.
There's straight up a line earlier in the movie where he is told to not give them technology because they need to come to it on their own. So all he gives them is certain seeds, just the certain ideas about what can be done. And he gives it to them thousands of years before that. And then he watches over those thousand years it grow to this. And so there's also a comment to be made that maybe if he had stepped in at some point, he could have led them better. And I think that's where characters like Druig really come into play with that kind of conversation. It's like, oh man, there's so much going on in this movie. Sorry, you were in the middle of something.
No. It's fine. All I was wrapping up is that it's one of those movies where, like, now that I've gotten to see it, I know that all that noise on the internet is mostly just noise. It's mostly being said for clicks, right?
Yeah.
And to be incendiary and all the other reasons that most of the things are said on the internet. So and I miss that. Like, that's what I miss. That's what I've realized is one of the reasons why I was going out and making sure that I saw, like, the Playmobil movie the day that it released, right? It wasn't just because I was kind of interested in the Playmobil movie in terms of, like, well, Lego did it, let's us do it. But then because I saw it, I had feelings and thoughts about it. So then when the world kind of lost their mind about what that movie turned out to be, is like, nah, man, like, this is how I felt about it. My opinion is not influenced by anything else in this world. And that feels good, right? To have an opinion that is almost all your own. And I've learned that I've missed
almost
that.
Almost like some people kind of just adopt that as a personality trait. They love it so much.
What, me?
No, I'm not actually saying you this time. No, I mean, like, there are some people that I think we all feel that way. And I think that some people mistake that feeling of pride and comfort and knowledge in oneself as, like, a way to, like, live your life. And that's different realms. But I think that there are definitely, and I mean, the internet proves that there are plenty of people out there who are so happy to be contrarian that they just are, even when they don't even want to be. It's a real problem.
Well, I mean, especially we're never going to talk about the YouTube algorithm on here, because I don't think anybody truly understands it deeply enough. I mean, it's a part of everything, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you want to be noticed by the YouTube algorithm, you kind of have to do what everybody else is doing.
Uh-huh.
So if people are being contrarian about a subject and you want to be like, oh, no, 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 it's actually pretty good. Like this, right? If this were called like Why Eternals is Actually Good and just presented by what we did with like fun little graphics and stuff, it probably wouldn't be picked up by the YouTube algorithm.
No, I get buried. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate thing. So now let's shift gears from the Marvel Cinematic Universe to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Good.
With the
my
first
hand
episode
really,
of Hawkeye.
Yeah, my hand was getting really sore patting myself on the back for all of that. So yeah, let's do this. Yeah, no, let's talk about Hawkeye.
Let's talk about Hawkeye. And let's start with, I mean, spoilers for the first episode of Hawkeye, the fact that Rogers the musical, and I can do this all day, right? Like double thumbs up, hilarious. But if that Bollywood dance number in Eternals had been for a Captain America movie, which would make sense, right? Since now that he's passed away, we're going to get the Straight Outta Comptons for him,
yeah,
right?
Right, exactly.
Like, of course, Bollywood would do a version, and then we would see how those two things, how outside of the country is celebrating the legacy of Captain America, and in country we're celebrating the legacy of Captain America.
Well, very noticeably, the moments that they choose to talk about with Captain America in Rogers the Musical is when he saved New York 10 years ago and not everything since.
Well,
now, granted, they leave halfway through. So,
right.
But
also,
yeah,
along the same lines of that, it is very much Captain America as a part of the Avengers, right?
Yes.
All the other people who are at the Battle of New York, which including Ant-Man, which that's my favorite theory that I've read coming out of it, because initially my thought was, well, it's adaptation, right? You and I both have had nothing but experience with how adaptation of real world events go into our media, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Ant-Man being an Avenger now, of course, they would probably find a way to fit him into the movie. But after the time heist in Endgame, Ant-Man was present at the Battle of New York.
Right.
So if one person saw him, or if like a cell phone video of him got taken, then everybody would just think that Ant-Man was part of that, even though he wasn't there until he traveled back in time from there.
The Mandela effect is actually a cause of a break of the timeline because they messed with it. So all of these things that we thought, that when somebody says, oh, it's the Berenstain Bears, and it's like, no, that's not it. And this idea being that that's just memory in general, like writ large.
Yes.
Oh no, I'm starting to have some real terrible thoughts right now on it. It's all because Ant-Man shows up for a second in that moment.
Yeah. But it was so good because, like, Hawkeye, like, let me tell you who wasn't there. That guy. And it's like, well, yeah, Hawkeye would know he was there. But also Ant-Man was kind of there eventually. And if somebody saw him and they're like, oh, wasn't Ant-Man a part of that? Oh, yeah, I guess.
Like, well, yeah, it becomes a phenomenal fun conversation. Yeah. And it's literally from just one moment of, and that's what I'm talking about when I say like the good, like juicy, fun, like Marvel filmmaking stuff that you see on display in like that 10 seconds on screen is just absent when you look at something like Eternals, and that's a bummer, right? Because that's the kind of stuff that they're so good at. I've been rewatching Loki again, and man, like that, there's just so much juicy goodness in that too. The moments like the files that he's looking through and the ways in which he's reacting to events as he learns about them and things like that are just so good. And like, man, yeah, Hawkeye was a blast. I gotta say, the one episode I've watched so far, and I loved it so much that I was like, I need to share this with the world.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. So, I mean, like, it's interesting because of those things. We should probably wait. Hawkeye's worth it. You should go check it out, right? That's the thing.
Well, and it's only going to be 6 episodes.
Yeah,
so we should
six
wait
episodes.
Because there's literally only, like, 4 episodes left. And as far as I know, they intend to have them all out by Christmas, right?
December 22nd is when the last one airs. So,
yeah, so we should definitely.
Yeah, so
like,
we'll give more. But the other thing that I want to discuss is a Twitter thread that I saw about the graffiti on the urinal. The Thanos was right graffiti.
Uh-huh.
And like the discussion online that was just like any other discussion about what would be something incendiary in our real world.
Yeah,
and I didn't know how to feel about.
Are you aware that there's been an entire subreddit dedicated to Thanos did nothing wrong since?
Oh yes,
the first movie
exactly.
came out.
Yeah.
I mean, like that's. I mean, like it's one of those things where it starts out as kind of an ironic joke, but you know, you listened to Piano Man ironically enough times, suddenly you realize it's your favorite song. Like it's that idea that like. It's gross, and the idea that that could exist in the world is unfortunately totally believable to me.
Dude, the fact of the matter is, like, there are people arguing, they're like, no one would ever feel this way, and it's like, did you just not watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier, where there was an entire group of people whose entire identity was Thanos was right? The Flag Smasher's entire doctrine was... Man, we had a pretty good time when there were half the people on the planet.
It becomes one of those really interesting conversations because I feel like they actually kind of even get into this a little bit in Falcon and Winter Soldier. I'd have to rewatch for specifics. But the attitude being, look, we don't agree that it with what happened, but, you know, since it did, we really benefited from it. In a lot of ways, it's the same thing that you saw with, like, the Manifest Destiny in America, where you had a lot of people being like, we don't love that our government is going out there and slaughtering all of these indigenous peoples, but we really like the land that it's getting us. So, like, it's that is where the Flag Smashers really fall on that conversation for me. And, like, the people that are out there just being like, no, Thanos did nothing wrong, is, like, that to an extreme. I don't agree with either of them, but, like, we have to understand how people get to that point, right? And the fact that that does happen in the world, because you do have those people out there that feel this way or that way about a particular issue, and it's baby steps. Like, maybe they only feel like this about it, but, you know, their neighbor feels even stronger, and then that guy is part of a group that feels even stronger, and the next thing you know, you have somebody that's bombing a hospital somewhere. Like that, yeah, sorry, unfortunately there are people in this world that do feel those things. Like, that's, it's gross, and I love that they address it.
Yeah. It got to that next level with me when there were people arguing about that. And I think the thing that really funked with me about the whole thing was, yeah, but at the end of the day, they meant that graffiti as a joke. And it's like, did they? How was the joke there? Is it a reference to the subreddit and that's hilarious? No. That moment is this guy who fought against Thanos, who lost his family to Thanos, who lost his whole identity to Thanos, is living in a world where he can't even take a piss in peace because that thought process right there is staring him in the face.
I mean, I will say that it's definitely gallows humor. Like, the moment it shows up, you have to laugh, because if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
But, like, exactly.
Right.
But say it's a joke feels
to write
so
it off
weird.
As just a joke is really weird, yeah. No, because it does mean something. And I mean, like, I mean, you know, like, let's just pick apart this one moment of graffiti for 20 minutes. Like, the idea being that, like, it's written on a urinal that he then gets to take a piss in. Like, like, there's just all sorts of levels to this. It's just, it is so,
I mean, that
Hawkeye
is
just so well done. And there's so many moments like that throughout.
Yeah, it's, I don't want to talk about too much because the show really doesn't get to cook in until episode 2, and I understand why, but I don't want to let slip anything. I'm so happy. As angry as I was after playing the Kate Bishop DLC for the Avengers game, is the exact opposite of how I feel about Kate Bishop in this show.
Oh, yeah, man. I actually had that exact thought as I was watching, as I was like, when the moment when she goes after the bell in the bell tower, I was like, yeah, this is the Kate Bishop that I want to that I want to fangirl over. Like, I am going to be so into whatever future they decide to hold for her. Like, if they can get her in the Marvels, however you're supposed to pronounce that, if they can do the miniseries, like Young Justice style miniseries, like I'm down for all of it.
Yeah. Is going to be good and exciting, but I think we'll stop it there. And I just want to finish off the MCU discussion. I want to give credit to Chloe Zhao for the directing of Eternals. She did Nomadland. That was kind of like where she came to the scene. And then like, as Marvel always does, grabbing these like directors who were nominated for an Oscar to make the next Marvel movie. She brought that, like, once I saw her name at the end, I'm like, oh yeah, of course that was a Chloe Zhao movie. That makes perfect sense. Like, the way that she approaches scenes and character work and everything that we saw in this movie. Like, just nice job. I want to give her her proper for her work on the Eternals, as everything you hear on the internet right now seems to be against the movie.
Yeah, like I said, like at the end of the day, we have to point out that there are people that are seeing this movie and definitely enjoying it. It's not just us, and even the people out there that are saying that they're enjoying it, I feel like some people are probably getting too defensive about it and putting themselves in really awkward positions, because I hope I've made it very clear that, like, I do have some issues with this film, but I am never going to walk away and disparage it in the ways that it's getting disparaged right now, because it does not deserve that.
It's certainly one of those ones that made me excited for what might happen next in the MCU.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
And that is the most important thing from Phase 4, right?
Yeah.
The roadmap is out the window, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know what they're leading to now, right? We just know the next visitation into the MCU and what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And it's been exciting so far. All right, let's talk about some other stuff, right? Because other stuff happened. Did you do other stuff this weekend?
I was thinking I was going to go see Encanto, and then I realized I was worried that it might just be Eternals.
Yes. That's kind of hilarious what you just said. I'm actually okay with Encanto because they've announced that it will be available on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And
actually, that
is...
Yeah.
Actually having a date for it. The other issue with Eternals is that, like, they're not giving us a Disney Plus release date. And when you look at something like Shang-Chi, where they waited until Disney Plus dated to gift it to us, a full, like, I think 80 days after it released in theaters, like, sort of, like, holding their nose up to the 45-day window that now exists, which it's still crazy, right? Did you ever think we'd have a 45-day theater exclusivity window in our lifetime?
No, not for popular movies.
Right? Yeah, no, it's not. It's not that Christmas movie with Ben Affleck. What the hell is it? Surviving Christmas? Is that the name of that movie?
Yeah.
It's a whole thing that's just insane. So, like, knowing now that Encanto is going to be that, I'm not worried about seeing that one in theaters. I know what our plan's going to be. It's going to be like when Soul came out and we all just sat and watched it.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to check that one out. You know, we did Hawkeye, we did that. What else did I get caught up on? Watched the first episode of Hitmonkey, just to keep the Marvel train rolling for a second more.
I watched the first two again, and I just watched the first one, and I liked it so much that I dug out my Hitmonkey Build-A-Figure from Marvel Legends, which
nice.
I love that I look at that figure, and that was a figure I had to buy three other figures to get all of the pieces for.
Who else did you make the purchase?
It was called Marvel Legends Returns, right? It was when Hasbro got the license from Toy Biz and had brought them back. Their first two sets had been, or maybe not, I mean, this was the first one that I was in the store and I saw it on the shelf and I'm like, oh god, a She-Hulk figure, a red She-Hulk figure. Never thought I would see that in my lifetime. Let's just be honest. Betty Brant as She-Hulk, I didn't think it was going to happen. So I bought it. And in the box with that was Hitmonkey's, I believe with her, it was his arms.
Yeah.
It was his arms and two handguns that came with She-Hulk. And then I looked at it and the other ones were Hyperion and Protector, who came with pieces of Hitmonkey. Now, Hyperion is basically Marvel Superman, if you're out there and you don't know. Protector, even I don't fucking know who Protector is. When I first saw the figure, I thought it was Phantom X. And I'm like, I freaking love Phantom X. I'm going to buy that figure. And then they released the Phantom X figure in the next line.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, no, that's weird.
Yeah, no, Hitmonkey's a freaking blast, man. Like, you, it is a total just strap in and just accept it style show. More to my point about how I can see why they put it on Hulu rather than try and fit it into anything on Disney Plus, not just because of the violence and the language, but also just because of the style, like the attitude. It is so much just like you're either with us or not like show, and that's so rare to see nowadays, especially from a Marvel franchise. So just really refreshing just to have that whole like oeuvre about it. And then on top of that, it's just fucking badass.
Yeah, he's awesome. I have one issue with Hitmonkey, and that's Olivia Munn's character does not look like her character fits with the rest of the animation at all.
Is she the redhead or is she the new recruit that comes in the next episode?
She is the niece of the campaign
the one,
manager.
Yeah, so we meet her in the first episode. Yeah. She's the yeah.
She's the
speechwriter. Yeah, I haven't seen enough of it to say one way or the other, but that's a shame because one of the things that I really like about it is it's not quite Archer, but it's definitely taken like some hints from that in terms of like kind of the square jawed like heroes style thing that's going on. Man, I'll have to watch a little bit more and see how I feel about
actually,
it.
Actually, the new recruit, right? So have you just seen the first episode? I don't want to spoil too much.
I've only seen the first episode, but the first episode ends with that whole, like, what's to come
what's
preview.
What's to come, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen a redhead. I didn't watch the what's to come preview. But the new recruit, actually seeing her in action in the second episode, I loved what they did for her design. It's so good. Like her whole character, like design and everything is wonderful and feels so real world for an animated series, specifically one that is sort of like anime inspiration behind the art, right?
Definitely a heavy anime influence in the art style for sure.
Right. But this way that they take this character and make her feel like real and human and everything, and then after seeing her and then showing again Olivia Munn's speechwriter character, I'm like, yeah, no, you, there's something about you that bothers me, and I think it's because you're so disparate to every other aesthetic in this world. And it's after two that I'm like willing to talk about that, but as if you go deeper into Hitmonkey, we'll see how you feel about it. We can check back in with the topic. Did you do 8-Bit Christmas?
I have not done 8-Bit Christmas yet because it's not Christmas time yet, Dev. It's Hanukkah time.
It is
so
Hanukkah time.
So I've been
time.
Doing a bunch of Hanukkah movies and episodes and things like that. I have to say that I have found one that I heavily recommend. It's a Hallmark movie called... Something in Mistletoes. It is, but it's got Fred Savage in it. That's going to be the moral of this story.
Is it Menorahs and Mistletoes?
Menorahs. It is. Thank you, indeed. It is Menorah and Mistletoes with Fred Savage. And the idea is, it is a young Christmas loving toy executive gets hired on to a new account, and she gets invited to pitch at the new holiday party, their next line. And she's so excited that she talks about what an expert she is, how great at the holidays she is, that when she finds out that the party is actually being hosted by a Jewish toy executive, she shits her pants and runs out to find the nearest Jewish boy she can to teach her all about Hanukkah, because she just doesn't know anything. So it's definitely one of those movies, and I have found this with many a movie that is geared specifically towards like things like Hanukkah or Passover, is there always seems to be this assumption that the rest of the world has no idea what these things are. Like the ways in which she looks at a candle holder and she's like, does this qualify as a menorah? And he's like, no, it needs to have eight with one in the middle. Like there's this idea that like it is a ridiculous level of ignorance about Hanukkah, kind of in the same way that in those types of movies you kind of also have to assume an ignorance on the level of Christmas, like the ways that sometimes people talk about, like, can you put mistletoe where, like that so it's kind of par for the course. It's just really telling in that when you can only find like three Hanukkah movies to watch, like the ways in which it's addressed, because the other ones that we've watched are, of course, Full Court Miracle was is on the docket for this week, but we've seen that one in the past. But we also checked out kind of in advance because it was only available through Tubi, so it had ads, so we wanted to see if it was worth sitting through in the actual holidays. We were so pissed we almost didn't finish it. It's another movie that is so ignorant in the ways that which they have to kind of teach about those attitudes. It's just not worth it. It's not even worth talking about. But the ways in which Hanukkah is kind of addressed in these holiday movies, like Hallmark movies and Lifetime movies, can feel a little bit more problematic than Christmas. And I think it's just because so many people celebrate Christmas that like the ridiculousness of a person needing to learn about Christmas is like fun. Whereas like, we don't have so many people that celebrate Hanukkah. So to treat Hanukkah as if it is like literally alien to us feels like it's really kind of negating a lot of people's like experiences.
Yeah. That, that don't sound great is what I'm going to say. That's going to be my response to that. And I'm sorry that you guys had to go through it. I'm a little bummed you didn't do 8-Bit Christmas season, but let me know when you do. I don't know if I'll watch it again, but That is something that we watched as a family on Black Friday because I'm it was excited. Officially Christmas season. We were like, we can start now.
Well, right? So we're going to definitely do our Christmas movies, and we're actually looking for some suggestions. So damn, an early plug. But if anybody out there wants to like send some stuff my way, for sure, because we've got a lot on the docket this year. There's 8-Bit Christmas for sure. There is the Christmas, the St. Nick story that Maggie Smith is doing the narration on for Netflix. We got to do Christmas Chronicles again, because I think next year Christmas Chronicles 2 is on the docket. It's this year, I'd be
Christmas
very
Chronicles
happy.
2 came out last year.
Christmas Chronicles. I must be thinking of Christmas Chronicles 3.
3 is supposed to come out next year. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to make sure you didn't miss Christmas Chronicles 2, because that was excellent. Everything I hated about Christmas Chronicles was undone by Christmas Chronicles 2.
There's nothing to hate about Christmas Chronicles. For you. But there's also some really good just animated ones that are coming out this year that we're excited for. And so there's a bunch that we kind of already have together. We just got to kind of fill the holes with some stuff that maybe we haven't seen before.
There was one that we were going to talk about. Let me know when you watch it. I forget what that one was. Home Alone.
Home Sweet Home Alone. Yeah, that's another example of one that we already know was on the schedule.
Yeah. So it'll be good. It'll be good stuff. But 8-Bit Christmas, yeah, let me know so that we can talk about it on the show, because I got thoughts. I got thoughts on 8-Bit Christmas. Moving from there, have you done any Cowboy Bebop yet on Netflix?
I have, man. Oh, my God. I'm really enjoying it.
I've only done the first episode, but I was so happy with what they decided to adapt in the very first episode of this series.
Yeah, yeah. Just cool, man. I don't know. So I watching that and listening to some people just like on, again, the internet, it just feels like nobody can have any fun anymore, because man, I just had a blast with it.
Yeah. I can't wait to do more of it. But just that first episode, I'm like, I remember now why I loved Cowboy Bebop as a kid. It's just a cool world to exist in.
Exactly. Cool music, awesome fight scenes, like, oh my God, so many references to so many things. Watching the animated series alone, like I completely forgot that the entire first episode is like openly stealing shot for shot moments from Desperado and El Mariachi, really, but Desperado by extension, because anybody that doesn't know, Rodriguez basically remade his first one in that trilogy when he made Desperado.
But definitely watch El Mariachi. That might be a fun thing for us to look into, that whole trilogy. But that's for different. That's for production meetings. They were part time, not
episode proper.
Once Upon a Time
in Mexico is one of my favorite, like long form. It is too slow for its own good, and I always have a hard time recommending it to people. But for myself, if I want to kill 2.5 hours of my life, I will put that movie on again. I love that movie.
Excellent. I did that. Have you jumped into Masters of the Universe Revelations Part 2 yet?
I have not dug into Part 2. I'll be honest, after some of the off mic conversations we have had about possible things with He-Man, I actually have been looking into some of the older stuff again. So I actually ordered one of the old He-Man and She-Ra movies that I'm hoping to get. It was supposed to be here over the weekend, but with the holiday, I wasn't going to blame anything for not getting here. So we'll see if that comes in soon. But I'm doing some of the old stuff because I want to then rewatch Revelations, the first 5 episodes, and get into the second one. But after with a little bit more grounding in some of the old stuff again.
Cool. I respect the hell out of that. That's fantastic.
You know what I have been watching though, Dev, am going to definitely encourage you to watch. Have you checked out Netflix's? This is going to go totally off the rails here. Have you checked out Pretty Smart yet? Netflix's kind of new sitcom-y attempt at the ABC Family style show. Holy crap, man! I've watched through it 3 times already.
Is that with the girl from Emily Young Osment. And Hungry? Yeah, I couldn't think of her name. Emily Osment. Yeah. I'm all about Pretty Smart. What we did this weekend, we caught up on everything. We use this Thanksgiving with everybody home. We have no new episodes of long form dramas. We have one sitcom left, but it's the one that just me and my mother watch, and we haven't had a chance where the TV wasn't taken up by other members of the family. So, yeah. But that once now that we're all caught up, we can start doing that stuff. And Pretty Smart, right near the top of my list, because I love Emily Osment. And I loved Young and Hungry, and it just feels like a continuation.
Yeah, it really does kind of borrow a lot from that. But also, I think it does a lot better handling some of the material that Young and Hungry just falls on its face. You know, like Young and Hungry came out at a time when like Melissa and Joey was all around that same time too, and that whole style where like we weren't sure where the wind was going to blow with the world in terms of like, is it fun to be offensive still? We don't know. Let's try it and find out. And like there's a lot of really like edgelord styles like stuff that gets said that then goes nowhere because they realize pretty quickly that they don't want to lean too deep into being like gross and mean. So then it like there's just nothing. Like it doesn't go in one direction or the other. Pretty Smart is really good at just like owning its wokeness. Like just be prepared for that, I guess. For anybody out there that doesn't, you know, that isn't aware that like a Netflix sitcom at this time is going to definitely lean a certain way about its views and opinions on things. But the other thing I will say is that it's also in that Netflix style where they dropped the first 10 episodes, but they clearly have the second like
Ones
half
ready to
lined up.
go.
So just like story-wise, just be aware that there's some stuff that like they introduce and then it feels like it doesn't go anywhere. But that's because there's probably another 10 episodes coming out like next month.
Right. I'm excited for Emily in Paris coming back on December 22nd. That's
Nice.
when I really liked Emily in Paris, and I'm excited to go back to that world. Pokemon, I'm almost done with Brilliant Diamond.
Yeah,
That's
so
the
oh
thing.
man. Yeah, so there was definitely some stuff that we were like, we should probably talk about this at some point. One of those things that I was feeling was, man, what's going on with some Pokemons right now? I mean, I think I sat here and defended the idea that like with some of the stuff with Sword and Shield, the ways in which the community kind of turned against it because of like it's just not my Pokemon, that kind of attitude was kind of weird. So Nintendo has clearly thrown a bone to these people by releasing the ones that everybody was like basically clamoring for when Sword and Shield fell on its face. And now it seems like Nintendo really kind of just stepped in it again because I've heard nothing but problems with this version of these games.
So I have no issue. Is going to be where I lead off, right? My first step on the ground is going to be about the fact that I've actually enjoyed these games. These were the games that killed Pokemon for me. I will say that straight up. We were in school together. We had known each other a year when Diamond and Pearl came out for the Nintendo DS, and I had kind of done Pokemon in secret. Like, it was a thing that I played, but Diamond and Pearl was this like moment where all of these kids who had been playing Pokemon kind of quietly on their own since 1998, what 1990, yeah, 1998 when they first released, realized, oh my God, we're all adults and in college and we all play Pokemon and we all have DSs all the time. So like Pokemon became just a way of life for like 6 months, like one semester while we were in college. Maybe you didn't feel that, maybe you didn't, but it really did. It was this like weird sort of thing where everybody was playing Pokemon again.
The reason that you gotta understand my background with Pokemon was I was in seventh grade when the trading card game was at the height of its being like canceled from school, like schools were just like banning it and stuff like that. So like I remember being in like a seventh grade science class and like secretly trading Pokemon cards under the table. And so like that is kind of like my big like reveal that hey the world is like super into this because we all were then. So like when it came up again in college, it didn't really hit me in the same way that it seems to have hit you because like I was still in it. Like not that I was a huge Pokemon guy. I want to make that very clear. I was never the Pokemon guy. The reason that I was not part of the other reason I was not a lot part of these many of these conversations, I didn't own a DS. There was no way I was getting a DS at that point in my life. And so like I didn't play the games, but like I knew the shows, I traded the cards. I did touch the games when my friends would let me play with theirs, but like that was also rare because like you didn't want to fuck up somebody's save on a Pokemon game, right? So like it was not something that I was ever a huge like nerd about, but I mean like I was also at that perfect time in your life where like you knew what was going on with Pokemon.
Right. Yeah, if you it'd be hard to avoid it in any way, shape, or form. But the
Right.
thing for me is that first game came out and like everybody, like I was in, you know, I've told the story before, but like my seventh grade experience, I was with 30 other kids and we took eighth grade classes and weren't on an eighth grade schedule to the fact that like We ate lunch with the eighth graders. If we were in other classes, eighth graders were there. It was this weird sort of hybrid thing. So all 30 of us kind of stuck together, and almost all of us were playing Pokemon at that time, right? So like this weird little pod of kids, everybody was playing Pokemon. And then like the chess club, which they had the things, but they didn't play chess, right? So I kind of created the first video game club in Coventry by making it a Pokemon club under the guise of chess club. And nice. Like people would come and they'd battle and they'd play the card game and everything. So it was this cool thing like that. But then once the sequels came out, it's like the bloom has gone off the rose of Pokemon because of what was happening with the trading card games, and that Pokemon was starting to be like banned or forbidden in school. So like nobody really talked about it anymore. And then you have the third games come out, the Ruby and the Sapphire. And by that time, nobody was really talking about it. So it was just like sort of this weird reminder that like Pokemon is this thing that exists and that touched a lot of people when we were in college, because like a bunch of people just started to have their DS on them and like, oh, let's trade. And da-da-da-da. And it felt weird to like have that be just part of life, kind of. But these games, right, that whole thing, and it's not that everybody was playing it. It was more the fact that, like, it didn't come about, it was no longer about the story of the game for me, right? Pokemon, as much as you battle with other people and you have to trade with other people, there's also a story in each game of you trying to become the Pokemon champion in whatever region you're in. But because so much of it turned into battles in the lobby of the Fine Arts Center, right? Or battles at Butterfield Dining Hall. That's what the focus for the game became. So, like, it's sort of the only Pokemon that I've never finished is Diamond and Pearl. Because I got to the part where, I mean, also, the fourth game is such a huge change from Pokemon because it's just a different game, right? Like, there were a lot of talks about the game is too easy. So Nintendo is kind of like, oh, you think it's too easy? We're going to make this one harder. So, like, you go into, say, the Electric Gym, right, which is the final gym, and it's a bunch of ground-type Pokemon who happen to know electric moves. But if you go in there with a ground Pokemon, which, because, you know, they're ground Pokemon, so they can't be electrocuted, you're, like, kind of at a weird disadvantage.
Yeah.
Because ground Pokemon are not affected by ground moves either.
Right.
So like, it's a lot of that stuff where like, it's the water gym, but oh my God, it's a fire Pokemon that knows water moves. So like,
yeah, it's their attempt to turn the formula around a little bit.
So like, and that's the thing about Diamond and Pearl is that it's very much them stepping outside of the comfort zone of the Pokemon games to kind of make them harder. So, like, they're already weird games in that respect, right? They kind of feel like their own animal because of how different they are from everything that came before them.
Okay.
Then add the fact that, so if you're one of these people who's coming from post the fourth generation of Pokemon games, so Black and White, X and Y, Sun and Moon, or Sword and Shield, you go back to this game, it feels so weird because those games kind of went back to not the easy thing, but like more the expected thing. So you're playing this game and it's like, oh God, this is kind of different. Like I need to think about what I'm going to fight with and all of that stuff. So those people are weirdly alienated by it. And then the people from before who have memories of this game and the games that came before it, they have a very specific memory of the game. So any changes instantly upset them. So it's just one of those situations where like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But then one of the bigger issues is that like, it didn't ship with like global trading.
So that's more of the stuff that I'm talking about, is the stuff that they kind of just like didn't do. I mean, like, one of the things that got pointed out is that there's moments in the game where you are locked out of like conversations with people because of where they're positioned on the map. But what they weren't accounting for is that you now have the ability to walk at an angle. So like, people have been like sidestepping like obstacles in areas because they on the Switch have the ability to, you know, walk
Sorry.
upright, which I guess was not like a huge thing on the DS. I didn't own one, so I don't know how deep the controls there got, but like also people soft locking themselves in areas because they're screwing up certain puzzles that they're doing, and apparently there's ways to do that now that like can completely screw you if you're not careful.
Well, I
That
mean,
were
that big issue comes from the fact that this is the first Pokemon game that has auto saves.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the biggest crime of everything is every Pokemon game, even Sword and Shield, which was essentially the first console Pokemon game,
Right.
like you still had to save your progress. But now whenever you enter a building, it auto saves. So like if you screw yourself up and you get stuck in an area, you are literally soft locked in a way that I don't think they ever thought could happen because they didn't consider what auto saving before and after events meant.
Well, or and what they didn't when they created the game is they didn't have to think about that because the save there was no there that was just that was never part of the QA process because it was never introduced before, right? So
Right.
it was okay that you could get screw some stuff up, you would just reload your save and be back at the
Right.
Pokécenter, right?
I mean, because like that's the thing. I mean, you look at like old RPG games, and one of the first things that I remember being told when I started playing like Final Fantasy was make backups on your save files. Like, don't just have one save file because you could find yourself just like 1,000 miles away from the item that you need. And impossible to get back to where that item is. Like, these games are not idiot proof. They
Yeah,
are
or you could find
designed.
yourself,
What?
yeah, you could find yourself having a conversation with somebody and realizing that you had options that you didn't mean to take. Like there were ways to cut stuff. You could lose parts of the game. Man,
Yeah.
Final Fantasy VII, like you could straight up just not end up with certain characters in your party if you didn't do things correctly for like Yuffie and Vincent. So like, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things where, like, but the big thing about Pokemon is you only have one save file. They don't give you that option to have multiple save files. And it comes from the fact that you can't, like, scum Pokemon. Like, I'm gonna trade all these Pokemon to you and then just reload my file and then I have them all back again. And Nintendo is so protective of that. Like, it feels like that's one of the other reasons that they're like, we need to adopt an autosave ability. It's that same thing where, like, Dark Souls, like, saves all the fucking time so that you
Right.
can't cheat at Dark Souls.
Yeah, part yeah. It's not doing it for your benefit. It's doing it so that you can't just freaking spam the system. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they're the big, I think the thing is that it feels a little half-baked because there are these things that, like, have become modern conveniences. That clearly were not priority for this remake. Remaking the game was the priority. I haven't heard anything about people like cutting through areas or anything like that. But the other thing is that I want to finish the game and I just haven't had the time to play it. Like,
Yeah.
I'm right outside of the final four. That's what I did over the weekend. And I hope to finish the game after we finish recording the episode. But it's
If
one of
I
those situations where, like, oh. Then I'll dive into all of those things, and I'm sure that there are a million things like that because Pokemon games are played by so many people that they are notoriously broken.
Yeah. Well, and so like when I'm talking about like the controls of like not knowing like you can go sideways and stuff like that. There's apparently like a moment where you're like going up a series of stairs towards, I assume, a gym leader, and along the way on the stairs are where presumably the fights to the gym leader are happening. And what they don't account for is the fact that if you just go to the left and then just angle up the stairs, like you could just walk around certain fights, and so you can just skim, maybe not all of them, but you can certainly save yourself one or two. And in a Pokemon game, like going to the gym leader, that could make or break like your ability when you get to the final fight, right? So like that idea being that just like even if you can skip one of those fights by just walking sideways, doops, you've kind of screwed that game, that particular part of the game up a bit. And like so it's not stopping anybody from progressing. In fact, quite the opposite, is making it a little too easy for some people to get through certain areas. But the soft locking stuff is a whole other issue. Like that is just as far as I'm concerned, that's the kind of stuff that becomes kind of unforgivable. Much in the same way that we haven't talked much about this, but some of the stuff that's going on with the Rockstar
Oh
well,
my
I guess
God.
not Rockstar, but the re-release of GTA 3, Vice, and San Andreas, right?
So, what I did with that was when they were announced to be coming out with the definitive editions, and I at the time I felt like a bit of a rube, right? Because they're like they're going to be delisted from Steam on this day, and I went to Steam and I bought them all on Steam, right? Just because I hate when content is taken away from us, right? Does that make sense? We always talk about how, you know, a remake doesn't erase the other thing from existence, but literally Rockstar was like, we're going to release the original ones from existence for our definitive editions.
Yeah, well, and that's well, man, it is definitely fuel for the fire for that kind of conversation. But I will point out that that's not because the remake like ruined the original for you. That was the company that made it literally going out there and saying, we're not going to let you have it anymore. That's a very different
Oh,
conversation.
right,
I
yeah.
will point. Yeah.
I
No, I
agree.
just, you're not wrong. People are definitely going to use it as like part of that whole thing where they say, well, you say that, but then they, you know, you see Rockstar just doing it.
Right. And that's not the thing, right? And I felt like a bit of a rube because I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to play these games, but I want to be able to play them in that version, right? I wasn't thinking about mods or anything like that. I was thinking about the fact that Vice City, I got to the mission where you have to fly a helicopter to place bombs at a construction site,
Yeah.
and I hated it, and I
Yeah,
never went back to it, but there's part of me that like really loves the world of Vice City. So
no,
I'm
I you know, there's something to be said that you wanted to be able to play it the way it was intended to be played. I don't often like saying that about these kinds of things with like remasters and things like that, but I think it's a pretty obvious statement you can make now, is that the versions that came out were definitely not the versions Rockstar ever intended to exist in the world.
Dude, to the fact that if you bought them on PC, they gave you those three versions I bought on Steam for free to
Just to
like
make up.
make up
Yeah.
for it.
Yeah.
I mean, what I wonder with all this, what we're finding, right? The truth, the truest truth about all of this is we now live in a world with video games where the full product is not what you're buying on release day, right?
Yeah.
Very rarely. I mean, that's been a huge thing that we've explored in video games in 2021 and even going back to 2020, right? Actually, going back as far as 2019 and the whole Bloodstained Ritual of the Night thing. Where I got because I got the game a week early and it felt like a complete game, and then seeing how they changed it after the actual release date came around.
Right.
But with these big games, these big open world games, your Grand Theft Autos, right? Something like Cyberpunk, that doesn't work. Releasing a half-finished game when a game's that big really is just detrimental to the project, right?
Well, and it depends on where you're cutting your corners. Because if you're saying like for you know, for a GTA, if you're saying that you're not gonna release like the multiplayer side of it, you're gonna get the you're first you're gonna get the full experience out, and then the multiplayer will come later. Like that's one thing because it's not detrimental to the experience of the game that you're giving me. But to decide that you're just not gonna do like graphics for the first 3 weeks that it's out, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
We're gonna
When.
give it a graphics upgrade once everybody has it in their hands. Why are you not just doing it right the first time? And I know why. It's because if you delayed the game even just a week more, the internet would just would burn you at the stake. I
Yeah.
get that, but man, this can't be the better alternative, right?
It's the better alternative for the companies, right? Because they get their money. And then once they have the money from the people who bought it, as long as it's not a complete mess, they're good. Everything is fine for them, right?
Yeah.
Like the problem is these big examples come along where the game is awful. The game is a lie based on what you marketed. So
Yeah.
then people demand refunds and whole like refund policies are shaped and changed because people paid $60, $70 for something, and what they got was not what was supposed to be on the tin at all.
Yeah, man.
Right?
What was the PlayStation refund policy or Steam? I think it was Steam that when they introduced the 3 hour play refundability. Because at first it was you you couldn't get refunds, and like the idea of selling like your game and stuff like that was just not allowed. And so that was it, Mass Effect or something. There was something that had come out that really, oh, Kingdoms of Amalur, I believe, is the one that kind of set off a lot of that stuff, the Reckoning or whatever it was called, the Kurt Schilling game there.
Yeah, the game that ruined Rhode Island. Yeah, that one.
Yeah. But I think it was tied up in that, where like they were just like, okay, we have to completely reevaluate the no refund policy that we hold. So if you've played a game for longer than 3 hours, you can't return it. And that was kind of where they drew the line. And I mean, kind of a fair compromise. I mean, 3 hours in, at that point, if you're still playing, I one could argue that you're playing the game. But I don't know. It's just weird that like we have been talking about the idea that you don't own your actual media since the inception of the show. Like this is something that I've talked about even further back on older shows. Like the idea that you don't own the thing that you buy anymore. That just doesn't happen. Not even the physical stuff you buy, because at any moment they could yank the license on it and you still don't get to play it. Or think about like anytime anybody talked about modding a PlayStation or a Switch, like Nintendo can come in and just
And
slap
brick it
you
from
slap
the
you down.
difference. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big things with the Switch in particular. It's why I'm sitting staring at a stack of 20 games as I record now. I've been collecting all my games from wherever they are. We're trying to find one Pokemon game that we definitely own, but we don't know where it is. That's where the Deckers are at right now. And these games, there's a whole like subculture on the internet that is connected to getting these games on physical cartridge and seeing what version of the game is on the cart, right? If it's a 1.0, or like with the limited run stuff, if it is the most up-to-date version that has been printed on the cart, so that if what you're talking about, if eventually the licenses are taken away from Switch, you can still play the game. It's one of the reasons why I got you that Scott Pilgrim Physical Edition, is because like they shouldn't be able to take that away from you the way that they took it away on PS3 and Xbox 360. I don't know. It's but it is getting scarier and scarier that like having a physical edition really doesn't mean anything anymore.
Well, and it kind of flies in the face of a lot of the conversations that the industry tried to have. And this is more in the film industry, but pirating, right? And the idea of being that like that you should be out there buying physical media because it reduces piracy and it becomes yours, and it's something you can own and hold on to. And they really pushed the idea of physical media in order to stop piracy. And they did it in gaming too. It's why you started getting versions of games that would come out with like Master Chief's helmet or whatever, right? Like it would come along with for the longest time, Call of Duty always had random stuff with it, to the point where at some point you could get like a Mars rover, right? Or a drone or something
Yeah, I
that came with
remember that.
one,
That was
like
crazy.
right. Or the night vision goggles that came with one version, whichever version that was. I think it was Modern Warfare. But the idea being that like they've pushed and pushed and pushed this idea that for us to maintain this, for lack of a better word, relationship with the thing that we love, we should really make sure we're buying it physically. And then to turn around and kind of say like even that doesn't really matter to them. It just because it's like it's really hard for me to kind of get on the whole like buy physical, like treat the company well, buy from the creator like line, when they just keep giving more and more reasons back to the pirates.
I mean, it's why I don't understand the people who poo-poo Game Pass as much as they do. Like, I see that whole side of Twitter, like, every so often comes up with, like, you don't own your games on Game Pass. And I'm like, well, unless you're buying your Xbox games physically, you don't really own your Xbox games either. And even buying them physically, so often, it's just a physical thing that it's just a game key,
I
right?
mean, do you? And the other thing is like, if you own a physical copy of a game, do you know how many games require you to have an internet connection that dings a server in order to start that game up? And then all they have to do is say, it's not worth us keeping that server going anymore. That physical game you bought is unplayable because they've worked it in that they can pull the plug on that too, guys. Like it's not, you're not saving anything by buying it physical anymore. It just doesn't,
Let me tell you why I never finished Bionic Commando Rearmed 2. Because of that. Because of that necessary ping to play the game. Because I bought the game when I was on land, and then I went to work on a cruise ship, and I brought my PS3 with me, and it would never load the game. And I'm just like, that is so stupid. Why did you do this, Capcom? And it's why, for so long, I was so wary to buy anything from Capcom. Because, like, a single-player game requiring an internet connection to play it was so terrifying to me.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to some of the stuff that you were saying about the idea that you buy the physical copy and then you put it in and there's 1,000 changes day one to it. So it requires a patch. And without that patch, the game won't start. It's one of the reasons that when the Xbox 360 really started to push the idea that you needed the internet in order to get these kinds of games to play them, things like Gears of War 3 and stuff like that, they were really taking a big bite out of their fan base because you have people all over this country still, never mind 10 years ago when the conversation was happening, still not having access to good enough internet for that sort of thing. And they were told then, like, look, like, these are the people out there that really want to play your game. They really want to be part of this world. And you're just completely cutting them off because you're requiring this nonsense like internet connection to, first of all, get the rest of the game because you didn't put it on the disc. And then on top of that, every time they turn it on, to ping a server somewhere that has nothing to do with the game that they're playing on their home system.
Yeah.
I mean, they got real close with Blu-rays, too. Do you remember when Blu-rays used to come with updatable previews? As long as you were on an internet-connected Blu-ray player, it would reach out for new previews to put, so you weren't getting just all old previews. My copy of Scott Pilgrim, funny enough, actually does that still. If I plug it in, it will reach out. Now, granted, it's not getting much back in return nowadays, so it's like previews for like Thor 2 and things like that when it plays.
To tie it all together,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, but like there was a time where that's the way we were going with Blu-ray players and the like, where they had to be connected to the internet so that they could do those kinds of things. And how hard would it be for them to say the movie won't play unless it is reaching out for that free ad space that we can push the newest Christopher Nolan movie on you or whatever, right? Like, it could be so easy for them to say that the movie just won't start until it gets those new ads uploaded. And if you don't have an internet connection to upload those ads, you ain't watching that movie, you bet.
I have a Blu-ray player that I got Black Friday, let's say 10 years ago, that does not work anymore because it's not connected to the internet. Because they're no longer servicing updates for it.
Yeah.
Like, it turns on, it's like, you need to update this Blu-ray player in order to do anything. And I'm like, I can't! I can't. They don't give me updates for you anymore.
You gotta like call somebody at the company who can like put the update on a USB and mail it to you.
Yeah. So it's like, it was just easier. It was a $10 Blu-ray player that I got. No, $20 Blu-ray player that I got for Black Friday. So then I just waited till the next Black Friday and I bought another one. Yeah. Like that's how I solved that problem. Like,
I mean, the thing that's going to save us all and the thing that really is the killer for us here in good old US of A is that we're doing nothing about any of this. Meanwhile, all of this stuff that we are talking about is getting tackled on a daily basis in other countries in this world. The idea that you should not require an internet connection for your product that otherwise is not an internet based product is in fact seen as like a crime in some countries. Like, you can't do that. Somebody pays you good money for a thing, it should just work when they buy it, is actually like law in certain areas. And the idea being that you can't have a Blu-ray player, for instance, a physical device, that's the word I'm looking for, you can't have a physical device that can just be shut off by the company, essentially, as long as that thing, there's like a certain amount of time that it should be expected it can be serviced. And if it cannot be serviced via like the traditional way, they have to come up with other methods. Like, I'm only half joking about the idea of you getting like a USB stick like emailed to you with the update in it, because there was a long time where that was the kind of stuff that companies would have to do in like Canada. They never had to do it in America, really, and at least not to my knowledge. But like, you would hear stories about that with like Canadian like Rokus and TVs and things like that when those early ones were coming out, and at some point Roku was moving faster than the TVs were able to update, and so they had to send like physical update USBs to some people so that they could update their Roku TVs because they had to abide by Canadian law. Like, it's weird little stories like that that make you realize that our country is really kind of doing nothing to protect the consumer in these cases.
If anything, they're doing everything to protect the corporation.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be that. I don't want to be those guys, especially this late into the episode. But it is something, and it's something that we're seeing more and more each day, and it's definitely reflected in something like a Grand Theft Auto Definitive Edition trilogy. And I think the worst part about it is that, like, the people who are like, I still want to get it. I still want to get the Definitive Edition because I want to play Grand Theft Auto. And I'm like, I get that. I get that you want to play it on your Switch, right? I understand why it's appealing to you. But please don't. Like, don't look at them where they deliver what is a inferior product and say, yeah, I know it's bad, but I really want to play it, right?
I think we should demand better. I think the Grand Theft Auto Definitive Edition is one of those rare examples in the world where I have to say it is not worth it. Because deep down in your heart of hearts, if you want to do a thing, you should do a thing. But if your reason, the only reason that I know of to buy this collection and is to either reintroduce yourself or newly introduce yourself to this world, don't do that, because what you're getting on these discs is not the game that you remember, is not the game that you think you're getting into. Like, it is so bad, like, some of the choices that are made, that it is not Grand Theft Auto anymore. It is a facsimile of what those games really ever were. And I don't just mean like the goofy like textures being weird. I mean, like, there's like apparently unplayable moments in San Andreas where if it starts to rain, the rain animation is just like basically just static white lines that just follow your character around, and it is impossible to play. Like, that's not good. Like, that's not fun for anyone. And so that all that's going to do is ruin your memories of a game you once loved, or ruin any chance of you making good memories with this game now if this is new to you. So, like, this is one of those rare times where it is so bad, I think we can definitively say, do not buy this thing. Like, I don't like saying those kinds of like absolutes with these kinds of things, because there's always somebody out there, right, that's like enjoying their time with it. I never felt this way with Cyberpunk, despite all the issues that Cyberpunk had. Like, I know plenty of people that bought that game and had a hell of a good time with it, and good for them. And I still want to buy it someday once it drops to like $5 or something like that, and I like I'll dive in. So what if my car floats for a bit? Like, I don't care about that sort of stuff. But like, man, the idea that when you drive your car in Vice City into the water, and it used to be this beautiful animation of like you just big splash and then you drown and then you get brought back to shore, right? Apparently now it's like, there's like a drip of water. It's like, it's almost like Saints Row style comedy of like you this giant ass car falls into the water and you just hear bloop, and then all of a sudden your character just appears back on land, as if it feels like it's like an arcade game almost, like a poor like dumbed down version of this game. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. In fact, he brings up Saints Row. If you want that type of game on the go for the Switch, really, Saints Row the Third, I believe, is the one that's on there, and it works, and it looks pretty good for the Nintendo Switch, and support that one if you want to get it. Avoid this one, at least until they do more with it, and right now, they don't really have any reason why they should do more with it, right?
It's well, not especially one of those... because... It's important to point out that Rockstar Games, who is traditionally associated with the Grand Theft Auto series, really did distance themselves in kind of a very not Rockstar way of handling this. They have just like been so far removed from this project that like I it's not even about like supporting them anymore, right? Like, the people that made this game, like
Take-Two Interactive. Let's
well, it's not right. It's not, but it's no, what's the, it's a very specific company that's been handling the ports for GTA to phones for the last 3 years. Like, Take-Two is in there as a money guy, but not the hands-on.
Oh, they're not
guys.
The one. I thought they were the hands-on based on everything that I had read. So, okay. I just know that it's not Rockstar. It's someone else that it's not like Rockstar had the people in their studio working on this one to do it. First of all, these remakes are essentially just an AI upscaler for most of the graphics, which is related in some crazy stuff regarding textures and lettering and signs and just the way the world looks and acts. So, like, first of all, this was done by a computer and just a computer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Grove Street Games. Okay. That's the name of it. Grove Street Games is the name of it. And they've been working on specifically the mobile ports of these games for years. And it really looks like they just took their mobile ports and just tried to blow them up and put them on a big screen. Like, it's just weird. It's just, I don't understand, like what was going through anybody's head at Rockstar. Because, like, you used to hear, like, these stories about the Hauser brothers who would, like, stay in locked in the building for weeks at a time looking at just, like music sheets because they wanted to make sure that the music that played at this one particular moment was spot on, like, cinematically perfect. So to think about these guys that are, like, poring over, like ads for the games and screenshots that are going out to press and making sure that even those are perfect, to think about those guys at any point hearing that this is the version of the game that was going to be allowed to go out is, like, insane to me.
I don't really want to get all conspiracy theory-y, especially this late in the episode, because, you know, I want to do it, but think about something like Red Dead Redemption 2, also Rockstar Games. Think mm-hmm. about all the hell that they caught for the crunch, right? Specifically so that the horse's genitals accurately reacted to the temperature of the world, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and how, like,
yeah.
people were doing 90-hour work weeks so that could be spot-on perfect, right? And then the world is up in arm, like, oh my god, how are we allowing people to be treated like this all in, you know, for the sake of a video game, right? And at the end of the day, they're not getting compensated properly, blah, 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 right? This, if I were a conspiracy theorist, if I had tinfoil on my head right now, like Sejin does, I would think they do something like this so that people are like, well, that's what crunch is, right? Crunch makes sure that something like this doesn't happen. Do we need to reevaluate how upset we got about people having to work like that to make our games good?
Like, you know, I know you say that this is like conspiracy theory level stuff, but knowing what we know about the Hausers and how terrible they are as like humans in the world, yeah, man, probably. It's probably not even that. This was probably just an FU to everyone that gave them shit about Red Dead and the crunch issues. And there are other games in wrapped up in that too. But the idea being that, like, this is definitely, almost definitely, certainly, them being able to give a finger. Like, that makes sense to me more than any other explanation I have heard so far about why this was allowed to happen, is that the Hausers are just that fucking petty.
I mean, it makes, like, I thought of it, and the real reason why I think about that is Red Dead Redemption 2 is a game that I was so excited for, because mm-hmm. I go back to Red Dead Revolver as, like, I'm one of the only people who will go to bat and just, like, die on the hill of Red Dead Revolver is a great game. So, like, then Redemption comes, and it takes everything I love about Revolver and puts it into a giant open world. So then, like, of course I'm going to be excited for Red Dead Redemption 2. But then when I found about, like, the inhumane conditions that people were put into in order to make the game, as much as I wanted the game, I just stayed away from it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I really can't support that with my money, right? Like, I want to be entertained, but I also want people to be able to live their lives, like, happily and not put themselves in, like, harm's way, especially for horse genitals, right? Catherine yeah. the Great already proved that it's not worth that. But so, like, that's what I think of. But then when, like, first of all, the other thing that we need to talk about is that Grand Theft Auto Online is a billion-dollar property.
Mm-hmm.
It makes multi-billions of dollars every year, right? So they don't really need to do anything else as long as they keep Grand Theft Auto Online and the people who do it happy with what that process is. Everything yeah. else from Rockstar is gravy. Like, we should be happy that they're doing anything else, right? Because they could rest on their laurels and just keep updating that game and be billionaires, right? I don't know. This is a lot of heavy thoughts about this one. But like when they come out with something like this, I mean, that could damage the property that is worth billions of dollars, releasing something like the definitive edition. Or, yeah, right, looking at it as the fuck you to all those people who wanted, who were upset with the crunch in order to make Red Dead Redemption 2 the game that it is, right? Like, maybe it's trying to push people away from the nostalgia of those to the superior situation that's going on with Grand Theft Auto Online. Because the fact of the matter is, right, and the other thing, this is all that's going to be talked about on the show, I don't want to go any deeper about it, is that Dollar Tree, after 35 years in business, is raising the cost of items in their store from $1 to $1.25.
Some of the items in their store.
Right. But they're not going to be a true dollar store anymore, right? And you could actually argue that they weren't for a while because they had $3 and $5 items, whatever. But with the dollar store branding, right, with the way that they were doing it, they made $1 billion in profits in 2020. They made over $1 billion in profit in the year 2020, selling things for $1 at the Dollar Tree. Right?
Yeah.
So it's not that it's unsustainable, it's that investors want them to top that number. And the only way that they can get higher than that number is to raise the prices. Because they're not just happy making some money, they literally want to make all of the money.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that's ever been in any business meeting ever, you'll know that at the end of the day, it's not about the numbers that you're making. It's about how do those numbers look compared to last year. It's always a comparative conversation. In any company I've ever worked for, any business meeting I've ever sat in, it's always compared to the year before. And it's that's insanity. Because at some point you do hit a thing. You do hit a ceiling where you're just like, I mean, do we need to make $1.5 billion next year? Can we just stick to $1 billion and be happy? And it's like, no, because that's not how business works.
Yeah, that's not how business works under capitalism. And that's not, I mean, that's a big part of everything that we've talked about in this episode, honestly, from the Marvel stuff to the marketability to like severing Eternals from connecting to everything else where it obviously looked like it could have, because it could risk the bottom line for it. But I don't want to become that show. I don't want to lean into it. It's just an unfortunate truth, right?
And well, the good news is, Dev, is that we don't have enough time left in the episode.
That's a good point. That is a good point. But it's definitely something that's there. And it's something that I've been thinking about almost all weekend with, like, Black Friday and the fact that, like, the stores are not as busy as they were before and the supply chain issues and everything that we've been hearing. So then, like, you look at something like Grand Theft Auto Definitive Edition Trilogy and you're like, what could the bigger message be behind something like this, right?
Yeah.
Why does a company that has a $1 billion property risk doing something like this, right? Doing something that could alienate that the value of that $1 billion item.
Man, and you know, you were part of that conversation that we were having with Zach about this when all this stuff started coming out, and I said it then, and I'll say it here, is that it is impossible to look at this as anything other than just a disgusting cash grab. And that is so sad, because I always want to make the best out of it. I always want to talk about how, you know, there's another side to it. There isn't one for me this time. There just isn't.
This was a lazy port. This was the laziest of lazy ports, down to the fact that all of the songs were included in this port and like released with all of the songs from those games, and then those ones that they weren't able to get the licensing for, they were just blocked off with that day one patch. I don't know. You made me mad. I'm tired now.
No. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, all of this is to say that, like, the problems that anybody out there is having with Pokemon don't seem to be anything compared to this shit. So.
That's true, right? This video games got problems, and that's it. And then some things that are causing video game problems, you're finding joy in, right? Like, tomorrow, right, in the grand scheme of things, this will release on Monday, Spider-Man comes to the Avengers game. And everybody who's not playing on PlayStation is upset about that, because they don't get to play as Spider-Man. But then the reveal that he's just going to be a character. He's not going to have any unique story content.
Yeah, did we talk about this on the show though? Like, I
no,
feel
we
like
haven't.
this is,
Yeah.
okay. Because so I feel like this was not the announcement stuff, but rather that my theory is just what I'm getting so much glee from this, and it is a shit eating grin that I wear today. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm going to be nice about this for the next couple of minutes, but this is exactly what I was saying about the idea that Spider-Man, they can't introduce anything into the game with Spider-Man that cannot be replicated in any version that Spider-Man does not exist. So again, things like him traveling around and how does he, like, what is he web slinging to? Maybe he can't web sling in this game because literally half the environments don't have buildings. So like, what is he supposed to be doing? Like, that kind of stuff. But also the idea that they can't introduce any new assets. So there's no way there was ever going to be anything fun or exciting to do with Spider-Man that would be brand new content, because the other versions of this game wouldn't have access to that, to those assets and those builds. So it couldn't have affected this game in any real way. We've known that all along. The second that PlayStation put their foot down and said, he's ours, you can't have him, they basically, it was a death note for this character, because they couldn't do anything with this character if that's the case.
And I think where people were disappointed with that announcement is the trailer that showed it looked like all new assets, and it looked like he was going to have a story about Spider-Man dealing with AIM and how it affected him. And that can't be, you're right and you're not wrong. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I'm disappointed a little bit that it's not coming with like some grand Spider-Man-esque story. Even if it were just like a mission, a Spider-Man mission, I'd feel like something, but it can't happen.
I do want to clarify that it feels like what they're so apparently a lot of stuff is going to be just like collectibles. Like, you're going to get a lot of backstory from like picking up collectibles in the world and stuff like that. But it is apparently going to lead to an AIM style mission at the end of it. But what they're going to do is they're just going to take one of the AIM missions that already exists and just reskin it, maybe redo some lines. So ADR in a couple of extra lines about it being more about Spider-Man. But it's going to be a mission you've already played, and it's going to be a mission that other people are going to have access to. It's just going to be just gussied up to be a Spider-Man-esque version of that mission. And so, like, it's all they ever could have done is, like, they're going to give you story-specific things that happen between characters, but you're not going to have any fun moments. There's not going to be any video out there of Spider-Man in scenes with these characters in a way that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be
strange.
Which
maybe is for the best, because I don't want to just look at Spider-Man's butt while he has some big moment explaining Uncle Ben to Steve Rogers.
Yeah, I've lost somebody too. Oh, this is awkward. Yeah, it's it was really reading the discussions with the developers where they're like, well, we always knew that we couldn't do much with him. Like, it was right when we started from it, we're like, we can't develop story content because only the PlayStation people would get that story content. We should focus on things that everybody will get to play with and enjoy. But more on that next episode, because I fully intend to spend plenty of time with the Spider-Man content in this game and report back. Because the other thing is, alongside Spider-Man, speaking of content for everybody, the power levels for your characters are going up from 150 to 175. That old Destiny chestnut is coming to it. But the bigger news, and the news that I'm... like, I played a lot of Avengers over the weekend because it was a four-time experience weekend. So, like, I gained, like, 17 champion levels with Black Widow so I could actually have her the way that I want her to be. What a waste of time that feels like every time I do it. I'm not going to lie to you. Because I found a mission that gives you like 5,000 experience points before the experience boost. So like getting 20,000 experience points, that's pretty much a level every time you do it. And it's not clearing the level. It's literally just beating the first enemy in it and then reloading the stage over and over again. That like... and I just did. I got Hawkeye from level 12 to level 38 in 2 hours.
Boy, this sure sounds like a great made game. I don't know what to say there, but
I got to tell you, the Hawkeye, like, he sucked until I started leveling him up, and now he feels awesome. But that's weird, right? But yeah, it's just one of those games. I mean, we've already shared our thoughts on the Avengers game, but the other thing that they're doing with the 175 and the Spider-Man drop is all of the unique currencies. You know how, like, you get nanites and you get, like, Uru and all of that? Really, the death knell of any sort of live service game is that we don't have just one currency. We have 17 currencies.
Yeah, right.
They're all getting turned into one universal currency.
Makes sense. It's the same thing that Destiny went through when it first came out, and then they started doing all sorts of weird ways that you could just, like, combine things to make other currencies and all that. Yeah, man. I mean, that's great. I see. It's still.
I don't know how to feel about it, because I gotta tell you, like, the one currency. There's one currency where I maxed out on it. The upgrade cubes, right? Yeah. I have collected so many that every time that I collect them, they're like, it's like inventory full, offloaded to your locker, and I'm like, well, I've seen that with, like, gear, but I've never seen that with currency in these games. Like, what does that even mean? How do I access my currency locker? Shouldn't the number just continue to go up? Isn't that how currency usually works in video games? So I am very excited, nervous to take a picture of the currency that I currently have and see what it translates to tomorrow when it all becomes one thing. Because honestly, I feel like I'm going to lose some currency. Not that it matters.
Congratulations, most avid player. You're about to lose a lot of your progress.
Yeah, I don't know. I really would like them to fix the progress issue with the Avengers Initiative, where it's just stuck at 92%, even though I've completed it 100%. Like, on the front page, it just says 92, but when I go into the game, completion rate is 100. It bugs the crap out of me.
Congrats, man.
Thank you. All right, I think that's good. I think anything else that you want to talk about or add? I mean, we have other episodes for this stuff, but we took a week off, so I was full of everything that I wanted to talk about. And there are still some things I didn't talk about.
There's definitely some other things that I want to talk about. You know, we should touch base about things like I did watch the new My Little Pony movie that's available on Netflix, and that's definitely a recommendation out there. Diving into a lot of old stuff I found. If anybody has any idea if there's any new Rainbow Bright anywhere, hit me up.
I watched the Nash Bridges movie.
Oh man, I forgot they were doing it. It was a TV, a made-for-TV movie. Right?
USA, it aired on the 27th of November. We watched it today. It was awesome. It was so good to go back to the world of Nash Bridges.
Rad.
And if it does well, then they're saying there's going to be a reboot series. I don't know how well it's going to do. All I know is that a show that I haven't watched in 20 years, it felt like it hadn't missed a beat. Right. And that felt great.
Awesome.
So, yeah. All right. So that's the episode of the Say Report, because clearly we have more to talk about, but we're getting a little long in the tooth, as it were, growing them like beavers. It's so weird that beavers' teeth grow forever. Right. I think about that sometimes. It weirds me out. But if you have any suggestions of Christmas movies that CJ might want to add to his list, he can be found on Twitter at Siege versus the World.
And if you have bought any of the Eternals figures, take some pictures of them, send them over to Dev so that he knows he's not alone. Or you can find him at Devin D. Decker.
Thank you very much. All right. So everything. Thanks for coming back to us. We're going to be talking about exciting things. But until then, William, please bring us home.
Thank you for listening to the Say Report with your host, Devin Decker and Seaton Serwick. Please follow the guys on Twitter and Facebook by searching for The Say Report, and you can always subscribe on your podcast channel so this is delivered straight to you and you can enjoy it every week. With apologies to your mother, we'll see you next time.